Welcome back to the 2A Ranch Wife podcast, where ranch wife, ag educator, cow lover, Jessica Anderson, shares real life ranch stories, discusses all things beef, and shares her insight about agriculture. As a passionate advocate and wife to the cow boss, Jessica keeps it real, raw, and genuine. From inspiring cattle tales to telling it straight with all the facts about cattle and agriculture, we're excited to have you along for the ride.
Hi guys, welcome back to episode 12. Today we're going to do something a little bit different. We are going to have real talk with a consumer. We've been spending a lot of time talking about our operation and how we do things, and there's been a lot of questions I've been seeing on social media about product labels and the mRNA vaccine that's coming out. And so I just thought that this would be a real fun talk to have with a consumer about things that you're probably thinking as well. So I want you to welcome Bailey Holloway. She's here with us today, and she's a mom. She's an entrepreneur. She owns so many businesses. She's the owner of Emerald Honey Photography and the Half Baked Homestead. She bakes all of our bread that goes with any of our beef boxes. And she's a great friend. And honestly, she asked some of the best questions I've ever heard. So I thought, why not? Let's have her on today. So I will let her introduce herself and tell you guys a little bit more about her.
Hi guys, I'm Bailey Holloway. Like Jess said, I have a couple little businesses and I'm very nosy. So I'm always asking Jess all kinds of questions about life, her beef business, how she manages it with her family. And yeah, like she said, we just thought it'd be super fun to get together and just kind of go back and forth for an episode. And maybe you've had some of these questions and you can get some answers.
Awesome. Okay, so we're just going to dive right in and I'm going to let Bailey ask questions that she has. And if new ones come up while we're talking, we'll talk about those too. And we're just going to give it a go. So Bailey, what do you got for me today?
Okay, so the first one is, like, how did you get started in ag? Because you were in education before you started your beef business and met Spencer, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so how'd you get started?
Good question. So really, I'd be lying if I didn't say I was a little bit of a city girl. Didn't have a huge background in ag other than 4-H. I showed lambs and showed horses all over the United States. And then when I went to college, I really wanted an equine science degree, but Chico State didn't have that. So I chose the next best option, which was ag business, and really kind of had no idea what I was doing, but I fell in love with it. I loved everything about it. And so I just got super involved in college with like Young Cattlemen's Association and Ag Ambassadors and just the other organizations that there were. And really, I guess, just jumped in with both feet and learned as much as I could. While I was in college, I thought to myself, like, I guess it was my sophomore year, maybe I should switch my majors to ag education because I really liked educating about ag. And then I thought, no, if I do that, I won't. What if I don't want to teach? I'll never be able to use my degree. So I finished my ag business degree and then went back and got my ag education degree and taught high school agriculture.
Okay. So going off that, I have a double whammy. Why beef instead of, you know, like breeding horses or sheep, like you talked about showing in 4-H? And then when did you switch from like teaching to running your business?
So good questions. I don't really even know why beef. I just, for whatever reason, when I was in college, even though I was an ag business major, all my elective work was in animal science. And there was just something about the beef industry that drew me to it. I can remember my freshman year going to the Young Cattlemen's meeting and just thinking to myself, I know this sounds so cliche, but that I was going to marry a rancher and be in the beef business. But I can remember sitting at that first meeting thinking that. And it wasn't even like I was on the hunt for that while I was in college, but I don't know. No, I wasn't looking for a husband. I was just, maybe it's divine intervention. I don't know. But I just thought, like, this is what I want to do. I want to raise cattle. And then when I met Spencer, I mean, the rest is history. And then when I went from teaching to just pretty much doing just the ag stuff was when we moved out here. So I loved teaching high school agriculture. I loved the kids. I loved everything about it. But I'll be honest, I got really burnt out being a teacher. And, you know, they say, I think the average lifespan of a high school ag teacher is less than 5 years. And it's just, it's crazy demanding. And so I was starting to get really, really burnt out before we moved out here. And then when we moved out here, I thought like I just needed a change of pace and got more into like outreach education through the cooperative extension. But then we started our business and it's like running 3 full-time jobs. So now that's all we do.
I love that. So my next question is, why direct sales? Like, why the model that you chose instead of selling to like a bigger manufacturer or doing your own breeding program? Like, why direct sales, direct to consumer?
So I would say the reason we chose direct to consumer sales. So when we lived in California, I can remember telling Spencer, like, wouldn't it be so cool to raise food for people and then sell it to them? And we didn't even own cows or anything at the time. And so I guess I was just kind of always in the back of my mind. And then once we got our own cows and we started running cows, being the one that runs the books, the commercial cow-calf operation wasn't going to pay the bills. Like in today's, you know, economy and world and the way things are, I just knew that we had to diversify. So I thought like, well, let's try direct to consumer. We weren't big enough to have contracts to sell to like commercial operations. We did 1 year before we were selling direct to the consumer. We actually sold our calves to a company called Country Natural Beef, and they sell exclusively to Whole Foods. So we did do that once, but I still felt that being as small as we were still kind of taken advantage of. And that if we were going to make the most money we could and make a go of this, then I needed to cut out as many middlemen as I had to. That's kind of from the business side of it, why we chose direct to consumer. But really, I think the passion in it is working and meeting the customers. I like talking with them. I like, you know, having them be part of the family. I think that's really like our business model and our mission is that it's a beef family, and that's how we want our business to be. We want to keep it small. I know it's frustrating that we sell out of beef all the time, but I like knowing my customers and what they're doing and what their kids or their grandkids are doing and having those conversations and like educating them about what we're doing and having them be able to have somebody they trust and that they can ask questions to about, you know, our food and our food system and our food supply, because there's just a lot of things out there that are kind of scary these days. So I think the connections with our consumers is probably number one.
Yeah, I definitely think with how much of a people person you are and how social you are, it just like elevates the experience and the relationship with your consumers and really sets you apart from other people who might be doing something similar in the area, because not only are they buying your beef, but they're also want to support you and your family and be a part of it with you. So I think that's really cool. What's the hardest part about your business?
One of the hardest. Okay, one of the hardest parts of our business. I don't even know where to start to answer that question. I think one of the hardest parts is that there's so many things out of your control. So as much as you can try to like dot your I's, cross your T's, you know, do all the things right, you just have so much that's out of your control, whether it be the weather. You know, I mean, a lot of our success and not success is dependent on weather, legislation. We're at the mercy of our legislators and, you know, regulations they pass and things like that. We lease a lot of our ground. So, you know, that's a whole nother ball of wax. So yeah, I think it's just, I think one of the hardest things about it, at least for me, is just there's so many things out of your control.
Yeah. So many different variables that you just kind of have to go with. I've never really been a godly woman. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of looked for that relationship, but I feel like doing what you guys do and having to relinquish so much control to just God and the universe, like you really have to have a strong faith to follow your dream.
I would have to agree 100%. I've always been a pretty, you know, religious person and prayed and those kinds of things. But I would say that this more than anything has really changed my perspective of like the idea of surrendering to God, because it is, it's so much of it is out of your control and so much of it is, you know, is really up to Him. And I always joke that if you've never crossed cattle across a highway, then you don't know Jesus yet. And so, I would 100% agree with that statement. Like this, this profession, at least for us, is will bring you to your knees and make you pray a lot more than you ever thought you could.
Yeah, I definitely, like I've told Randy before, I've never felt closer to God than I have after being introduced to like this lifestyle, just being out there. And, you know, there's a lot of birth and death and hard work and faith and, you know, that things will work out and kind of go your way. And it definitely, like, I don't know, the simplicity of it, but it's also so, it's hard to explain, but it definitely has brought me closer to my faith. And that was, that's something that's been so new to me, but I like it clicked, it all clicked. Okay. So a little fun one. What's the best and worst thing working with your spouse?
That's a fun question. So I would say the best thing working with Spencer is, I don't know, he's fun to work with. Like we get along really, really well and we like to work together. So he's just fun to work with. And there's really no one else I'd rather work cows with. And I owe him everything that I know. I mean, he's literally taught me everything. And God bless that man because he's got a lot of patience. So yeah, he's really, really fun to work with. I would say the worst part about it is sometimes he expects me to be a mind reader. And so that can get a little bit challenging. But that, and he's kind of like a grouchy old man stuck in a younger man's body. It's kind of like Riley, a little kid stuck in an old man's body. But I think the mind reading thing would probably be the toughest.
I guess if you spend so much time together, you just assume the other person knows what you're thinking. Okay, so going on, Riley, how do you do it? How do you do so much? Because he's around all the time. Like, how do you find a balance between wearing so many hats and being a mom and integrating him into your work life? Like, what are some tips you might have for other parents to do that? Or, you know, how have you gone about that?
That's a good question. I don't know if I'm qualified to give anybody tips because I joke that I've kept him alive for 3.5 years. But I would say, like, being 100% honest, the first couple years, especially when he was immobile, was really hard for me because I'm not a, like, sideline kind of mom or ranch wife, however you want to put it. I like being right in the middle of everything. And since day one, have always been in the middle of everything. So I guess really wrapping my brain around, like, I can still be helpful. It just looks a little different. I would say I wish I gave myself a little bit more grace and was a little easier on myself those first couple of years because I was super hard on myself about it. Now that he's a little older and a little more mobile and can actually help, it's a little bit easier. But those first couple of years were tough with him. But I mean, we had no choice. Our family doesn't live where we are and you just load him up and bring him. I mean, he was 4 days old when we preg checked cows. And so he's been going, you know, since he was born. And I think too, when you bring them along and they go, they don't know any other way. So they just kind of do it. I would say to, you know, new moms out there or moms trying to figure it out, just, I know everybody tells you this, but like, cut yourself some slack because it's tough and it's not easy. And someone who like struggled so much with feeling like I'd never be able to, you know, do these things again, I can honestly say as the years go on, they get a little bit older, it gets a lot easier and you'll get to do those things you got to do before.
And it's almost more fulfilling because you get to do them alongside with your children. Mm-hmm. I feel like, and you get to see them do it and they get to be a part of it. And in today's society, this kind of lifestyle and that kind of childhood is so rare. So it's so cool that he gets to be a part of that. But yeah, to new moms out there, you're doing great. It's hard for everybody. You're not alone. You're doing awesome. How do you try? Because I doubt any mom has, no, you don't ever find a balance in life. You're always pulling from one side of the scale. But what are some things that you do for yourself? Or that you implement into your daily life to try to find like some kind of balance?
So I would say I used to think that you had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and read your Bible or your devotional or work out. And Riley never slept through the night until he was almost 2 years old. So like I used to beat myself up over that. And then I realized like sometimes it's just 10 minutes. So whether it's going outside for a walk by yourself and all you can manage is 10 minutes, then take those 10 minutes and maybe you take like 3, 4, 5 different little 10 minute breaks throughout the day. I think for me, once I kind of like shifted my perspective on that, what does that like time for me look like? I'm really lucky too, because Spencer is great about, you know, taking him to give me time to go do the things I need to do or want to do, or just take some time off. So I'm really lucky with that. But I would say I like to be outside. And so last year was the first year I had like a big old garden, and it was really great. And it was something that like I could just walk out my back door and go do for 10, 20, 30 minutes. And like the boys would stay in the house or do their own thing. And it was nice. I just got to like be out in nature and, you know, soak up some vitamin D and just do something different. Like there's just something like cathartic about like getting your hands dirty and, you know, and so I never really understood that before until I gardened last year. And so, yeah, I just try to take those little things, and do that, you know, go for a 10 minute walk or go out to my garden, or Spencer will saddle my horse and I'll just go lope circles in, you know, in the arena or whatever it is. But I think shifting it from like, oh, I have to have an hour to be able to, you know, do these things for myself, to like, well, I don't have an hour, so maybe it's just 10 minutes here and there, and really like taking them throughout the day whenever they come. So I'm a big time like structure person and like things on a schedule. And I'm sure all moms can attest to this. Like when you have a kid, that goes right out the window. And someone who's type A, that was really, really hard. So once I kind of was like, oh, well, maybe I could just take a 10 minute break at 11 o'clock because that's when it works. That helped huge for me.
I think if you like take a day planner that's scheduled out hourly and you just erase all of the times on the side and just write out your list, you'll get it done.
Yeah.
It just won't be by the time you plan to get it done by.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you like, you can't go, like you can't get through the day without, if you like miss? Well, I mean, obviously you can get through the day, but is there anything that like you have to do every day to keep yourself grounded, or to like a part of your routine that just really helps you get through the day?
I would say, so last year I started working with a holistic functional medicine nutritionist, and she really helped me a lot because this lifestyle is stressful, like beyond stressful. And you know, I thought that I was managing my stress, but I definitely was not managing it at all. And just had a bunch of health issues kind of come up. And so she gave me some, you know, things to try to incorporate, and really was the one that was like, just do it. If all you have is 5 minutes, you know, for 5 minutes. And as funny as it sounds, I never thought that I was the kind of person that could like sit and meditate and, you know, be alone with my own thoughts. But I did. I started with 5 minutes a day, and that was like game changer for me. And so I used to do it in the morning, and then I just realized like with our lifestyle, I was beating myself up more on the mornings that I couldn't get it done. So now I do it before I go to bed, and it like helps me fall asleep. So I would say meditating and praying are probably two of the things that I like don't go without. And something that I've incorporated the last, I don't know, probably 3, 4, 5 months, I guess, I do these like ice cold face plunges. I know they sound funny, but like I even take a collapsible bowl with me when we travel, because it takes like 30 seconds and I can literally feel like the adrenaline and just like it just flush away the minute, you know, you take your face out of the water. So I know it sounds funny, but those are the couple things that I pretty much religiously do every single day.
So great. If I had an ice maker, I would do it every day too. Okay. What's your favorite and least favorite cut of beef?
Oh, good one. Favorite and least favorite cut of beef. Favorite probably is a ribeye. Ribeyes are hands down, I think, the best. I love them even more than a prime rib. Yes, I said what I said, but I'm a ribeye girl. Least favorite? Probably. I know this is going to create some drama, but I do not like T-bones. I like a T-bone or a New York, I'd let you take it all day long. They're just, I don't know what it is. I would rather eat a chuck roast or short ribs or ground beef before I ate a T-bone or a New York. I like fillets. Fillets are okay. But yeah, I'm not a T-bone or New York fan.
Interesting. What do you think is the most underrated cut of beef?
Hands down, the most underrated cut would be a chuck roast. I think whether you get it as bone-in or deboned, or you have them cut into chuck steaks, and you can just do so many things with them. You can, you know, cook them like a roast in a crock pot. You can do them as pot roast. We barbecue ours with our cowboy tri-tips. Definitely chuck roast.
I've had a London broil before, and that really like shocked me. It was great. Yeah, that's a chuck roast kind of more comment. Okay, so I want to ask you about some of your goals. What's your 1 year goal for yourself professionally, 5 year and 10 year?
I haven't had to answer goal questions in a long time. I would say my 1 year goal professionally is just, I think since like going into this next year is really the first time that like Spencer or I or both of us haven't had a town job as well. So like I think 100% committing to the business and working it like 100% business, because I mean, we always have worked it like a business. We've also had, you know, something to fall back on. And I think that's just a different mindset. So, you know, working those different angles in the business. And I think with that also trying to do a better job of having a little bit of balance in doing that, because we both can be workaholics and then you just get really burnt out. So I'm kind of trying to blend some of that together. I would say our 5 year goal is, or my 5 year goal is, I would like to definitely grow our cow numbers, for sure. Grow our beef business a little bit more, not a whole lot more, but a little bit more when we can grow our cow numbers. And then probably 10 year goal. I know at some point down the road, we'd like to own our own ranch. And so I'd say like within the next 5 to 10 years, I'd love to be able to own our own place.
Yeah. Hopefully the market will calm down a little bit. What are some projects that you have coming up? You're at Circle S now. You have your podcast. Do you have anything else planned for this year? Or are you kind of just trying to put that energy into the things that you already have going on?
So projects this year, I'm horrible about like coming up with new ideas all the time. Like, hey, let's do this. That's, I know, really, like sometimes it's so bad. I'm like, I need to calm down. This year, definitely the podcast. So I've been trying to be committed to dropping one episode a month. And the reason for that is because I'd really like to be able to grow into like speaking engagements and hosting and things like that, just to, you know, spread more word about agriculture and all those good things. And then the other thing this year that we have fun planned in the books, if you get our newsletter, our email newsletter, we kind of spilled the beans about our farm to fork dinner this year. So this is the first time we've ever done this. We always have customers and people ask like, hey, we'd love to come out to the ranch. And so this year we're going to make it happen. And we're hoping that if it, you know, goes well and people like it, then we can offer more of them next year. But we're going to invite people out to the ranch, just a small group, to come have dinner with us. It's a catered dinner by the amazing Lily Doolin of Faded Apron. So she's going to be doing our dinner. And the menu is amazing already. And so, yeah, I'm super excited about that. And Bailey's going to be cooking the bread for the dinner too. So yeah, and really just like showcasing small businesses and local ag producers in the area and having people come out to the ranch just like you were family.
I think that'll be a huge hit. I know, I can't wait. Yeah. So if you guys out there want to go, get your ticket as soon as possible whenever they start going on sale, because they'll go fast. Okay, so there's all this talk about the upcoming food shortage. What do you think that the consumer should know about how that affects the beef business? What are some trends that you see happening with the foods? I mean, the price of cattle is insane right now. What do you think will happen?
No, that's a great question. I think like food shortage, food crisis is always something we're talking about. I think the biggest thing for people is no fear mongering. So there is food at the grocery store that's safe. I'm not saying that food at the grocery store is not safe. But if you're worried about a supply of food, I would say, you know, really utilize your local sources. Because if you can buy direct from the farmer or direct from the rancher, then you're going to have a consistent supply, because they're the ones who get to dictate, you know, how many cattle or hogs or lambs or whatever it is they're killing. And if you can get on that list, then you know you're going to have that protein source all the time. Same thing with your, you know, local produce farmers and ranchers. There's a lot of them that offer like CSAs, community sponsored agriculture programs, that you can get like subscriptions every week and things like that. So I would say if you're worried about the availability of it, I know sometimes it can be a little bit more expensive, but really buying local and supporting that rancher or farmer, because then they're the ones who are going to still be able to provide you with food. Because if you remember 4 years ago when the grocery store shelves were empty, your direct-to-consumer suppliers still had protein, lettuce, you know, all those kinds of things. So yeah, that's what I would say. Definitely, you know, kind of go more local for that. As far as, you know, them creating a food shortage and things like that, I wish I had a crystal ball so I'd give you a better idea. There's a lot of speculation out there, you know, without getting too controversial or too one way or the other. It feels a lot like they're trying to control our food supply between the regulations they're putting on ranchers and farmers and how hard they're making it for smaller producers to be able to produce. You know, the government does want those bigger companies doing it because then they can kind of control those bigger companies. So I would say like that is kind of a little bit nerve wracking because they're trying to cut the feed out from, you know, the smaller rancher and farmer. If you have the ability to raise any of it yourself or, you know, learn those skills, or even maybe you don't want to, but you can join a group and offer something else. Maybe you know how to sew and your neighbor knows how to can, like you can trade. So I think, and this might kind of sound old school, but I think getting back to some of those older ways of bartering and trading and hooking up with your neighbor to share things that you each have strengths in isn't a horrible idea either. But I would say, you know, first and foremost, as far as food goes, if you're not going to raise it yourself, then start developing those relationships with those direct-to-consumer suppliers because they're still going to be the ones who have food for you when defecation hits the rotary oscillator.
It took me a minute. I was like, did she just say defecate on her podcast? And then it clicked. Yeah, I will say, like, once we started butchering our own meat, having chickens, having a garden, like, the anxiety of all of that talk just is gone. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even pay attention to what's on the shelves or not on the shelves at the grocery store because I know I can either make it, grow it, or kill it, yeah, or get it from somebody local because where we're at, I feel like this area, it's so easy to make those connections and everybody is more than willing to help each other. But yeah, definitely talk to your local mm-hmm. ranchers and farmers and the supply is there. Mm-hmm. It's just not on the shelves at the stores. I saw this thing on social media that said that they're trying to pass a bill or a law that they can track ranchers' cattle. So that's real?
Yes, it's real.
Okay, because he looked at me like I was crazy. So how do you feel about that? Is it possible that that could happen?
So to my knowledge, they already passed that bill. They've been trying to do it for, they've been trying to do it for a couple of years and they slipped it into some other bill and that's how they got it passed. The traceability program has actually been around for a while. So our cattle are program cattle and they're certified USDA, all natural, non-hormone treated, non-GMO and GAP 4. Well, in order to sell cattle like that, we have to put an electronic ID tag in their ear. And essentially that tag, you know, shows people when they were born. It goes on to the next buyer. It tracks all that. It tracks all the programs you are on, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not surprised that they did this. This is my complete speculation. And what I'm thinking is the reason they push so hard on that is because they've already passed the mRNA vaccine for swine. So they've been trying to pass it in the cattle industry. They've been kind of fighting it, but the FDA approved it for swine. I think the next one they're going to go to is passing it in cattle, and they're going to use that traceability program to link the vaccine to. And what they're going to do is they're going to say, if you want to sell your cattle commercially, you have to have that proof. That's my opinion. That's where I can see it going because they did that with Bang's vaccinating heifers. So heifers can get what's called brucellosis. And if you want to ship heifers across state lines, they have to be vaccinated before, I think, 2 years of age, and they have to have a trackable tag. And so I think that's kind of the same thing. Otherwise, if you sell a heifer and she doesn't have a brucellosis tag, that's saying she'd been vaccinated. She has to go directly to slaughter. They've gone away from the metal clip and they're going to the EID tag with that. Bulls carry what's called TRIC. So they get TRIC tags. And that's the same thing. If you transport bulls across state lines, they're supposed to have a TRIC tag for trichinosis. That's a disease. It's basically an STD in cattle that causes abortion. But my gut's telling me that that traceability tag is going to be linked to some sort of vaccine, which is just one more way that they can, you know, control our food supply. And so that's why, you know, just circling back to like buying local and buying direct, because if you're buying direct, I know for our operation, if that's the way it goes, we won't sell commercial calves. We'll sell everything direct to the consumer. Because right now we keep about half to two thirds and sell direct to the consumer, but the rest of it does get sold commercially. But if they go that route, then we'll just go to selling it all to the consumer.
And what does that mean?
When we sell them commercially, we can sell them like on a video sale, and we've had Harris Ranch and Harris Feedlots buy our cattle. They might go to, like I said, Country Natural. It just means we're selling them as live cattle on the hoof as weaned calves. So they're usually like 8, 10, 12 months old. Yeah, we sell them through an auction.
Okay, why Black Angus? Why not Herefords? Why not Red Angus? Why Black Angus?
Well, if I had my way, if I had my choice, they would all be eared cattle because I love me some long red eared cattle, but the buyers don't like them. So when you sell commercial calves, so you sell them at an auction or on a video sale or even a contracted buyer, the Angus Association did a phenomenal job of marketing certified Angus beef. So the buyers pay more money for black tight-hided cattle. And so that's why we run a lot of Black Angus. I would say our herd is like probably 60-40, 60% Black Angus, 40% Red Angus, maybe 70-30. But we do run a lot of Red Angus cattle, and then we just breed them back to black bulls. And they 99% of the time have a black calf. But I will tell you this, crossbred cattle grow better and they raise better, stronger calves. And that's a whole nother conversation for a podcast because I could talk for 3 hours about, you know, crossbred cattle and hybrid vigor. But I'm going to tell you this right now. If you hang them on the rail and you take the wrapper off of them, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between Black Angus, Red Angus, Hereford, you name it.
Yeah. I do think that is like a great marketing tactic because you, I mean, they just look big. So you're thinking, I'm going to get all this beef from this cow. Look how big it is.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about like what's the cycle of your bulls? How long do you keep them? When do you get them? How many do you have? Like, what does that kind of look at? And then like, what's the cycle of your heifers? You guys just got 20 new head of heifers. How long will you breed those heifers? What happens to them when you're done breeding them? Like, what does that kind of look like for the people who might not know, like me?
So bulls, we usually keep 3, 4, 5 years. Just kind of depends on how all the bulls hold up. Bulls are tough. They get to fighting and they hurt each other. So a lot of times we have to sell bulls before you really should be done using them because of that. They'll, you know, break a hip or a leg because bulls like to fight. They're a pain in the butt. They're like having a room full of teenage boys. Oh, they're awful. Even, yeah. And so we typically run, I don't know, anywhere from like 6 to 8 bulls, just depends on how many cows we're running. And like I said, we try to keep them for as long as we can, but you don't want to keep them too long either. The other thing is if you retain heifers, then you kind of have to start paying attention if you're going to run your heifers separately because you don't want dads breeding their own daughters. So that can kind of change things up too. Heifers, we'll keep a heifer once she has her first calf, then she becomes a cow, and we'll keep her as long as she keeps producing. Sometimes with first calf heifers, breeding back that second year is the toughest on them. So depending on, you know, what the winter was like or, you know, those kinds of things. If she comes back open that second year, sometimes we will keep her. If she had no reason to come back open, then we'll cull her and sell her because then you'll usually have a cow that like breeds back every other year. And feeding a cow with no calf is just a cost. You know, it's not good business. So yeah, we'll keep them as long as we can. I know we've got some cows that have a 6 iron on them. So a 6 iron would be the year that they were born, but I know that they weren't born in 2016. I know they were born in 2006. So they're almost 20 years old and they're still calving and they still look good. So, I mean, I would say longevity on a cow, 10, 12, maybe 15 years. They can go 20 years and do great. It just depends, but yeah, we'll keep them as long as they keep producing. And we have some cows that I've told Spencer he can't sell because they just have to die on the ranch. So there's that too.
I think that would be hard if he's loyal, you know, good producing cows and then they're not anymore. Just let him retire. What do you think is the biggest misconception of ranching? Like from maybe like somebody who lives in a big city and has no idea and just goes to Whole Foods and buys their beef. What do you think is the biggest, like something that you hear often that people think, but just is completely untrue?
Oh, that's a good question. I think one of the things or general themes in the questions I get a lot of kind of go back to like animal husbandry or animal care. And so I think there's a lot of misconception about like how farmers or ranchers, whether it's hogs, cattle, whatever, I think there's a lot of misconception on how those animals are treated. I think people being so far removed from the farm, we're talking 3, 4, 5 generations now, they just don't understand that. And really, like, I think farmers and ranchers take the utmost care of their animals, because if we don't, they don't produce for us. And if they don't produce for us, then that means we don't make money. So there's no winning in not taking care of them. So I would say, like, I think that's kind of like the revolving theme, or that it always kind of circles back to, is like the concern of care is, you know, how they're being taken care of. Sure, there's always that bad apple, but for the most part, I mean, farmers and ranchers take really great care of their animals.
That's the first thing I thought of when I thought of that question, was I think you know, people who are so far removed from the lifestyle or the business, they see these videos put out by PETA and they think that like everything that's butchered is abused. And I mean, we have raised and butchered animals and they're so loved. Like, they live the best life because it's, you know, like, we're honoring them because they're giving back to us and our families. And, you know, you get a sick, hurt cow, you're going to get a bad product. So you're going to do everything you can to take care of them and keep them happy so that they're producing for you. But yeah, I definitely think there is like a big misconception between ranching or farming and it just being, I feel like abusive is the best word, but it's not like that at all. And brandings, I think, like, after I went to my first branding, I was like, oh, this isn't anything what I thought was going on when I saw videos. But it's just, it's part of the job. Everything's fine. You have to get them vaccinated. You have to get them branded because that's how you have to take care of them. That's your job. Mm-hmm. So talking about Riley, you also have kind of a separate business that you've wanted to start, but you're busy. But homeschooling, I think for me, like, I'm leaning more that way too. A lot of it has to do with you convincing me, but also just like the lifestyle that we have and where we live. But how does ranching and homeschooling and that kind of atmosphere, like, why do you want to homeschool?
I think for me, being a high school ag teacher and seeing those aha moments in ag shine through kids' lives and how it's like, how it transformed them. Like, there's just something different about being involved in ag. And I taught at a traditional high school in a traditional setting. And I taught at a charter school, which was homeschool based, where I was a personalized learning teacher and essentially like a homeschool coach, supported parents, and then taught high school ag at that charter school as well. But I just, like, there's just something different about when kids are like submerged in ag and can learn and do those things and like apply what they're doing in the classroom to what they're doing. And I just think, like, you know, there's no better teacher, and homeschooling's not for everybody. And we can talk about this on a whole nother podcast, but homeschooling's not for everybody. But I think for those parents and families who want to homeschool and have a child that's what they want to do with, I think they should. There's no better teacher than you for your kid. There's so many resources out there to help you. Students will never learn more than what you can teach them, like, in real life. And I used to tell my high school kids that all the time. Like, I don't care if you remember what mitosis and meiosis is in my biology class, but you're going to darn sure remember that showing up to my class on time and turning your homework in on time is no different than showing up to work on time. Otherwise, you get fired. And I think in homeschool, like, you can teach them more of that they miss in high school or in elementary school or whatever it is that they don't get. And there's just so many other things they can learn and do and be a part of. And I can't wait to start homeschooling Riley when he's old enough, especially like to be able to offer maybe like co-op classes and ranch school classes and things like that. But yeah, I'm a firm believer in homeschool. I think we've got time for one more question.
As a parent, what kind of, I feel like legacy is a little dramatic of a word, but like, what do you want to leave Riley with? What do you want him to get out of like all this work that you guys are putting into this business? Like, what kind of legacy do you want to leave? So morbid.
No, I think that's a great question. I think the biggest thing we want Riley to know and remember is that, like, to believe in yourself, like, no matter how crazy the idea or how far-fetched or how stacked against you the odds are that if it's something that you want to do and it's on your heart, then you just better go ahead and do it. Just don't be afraid of hard work. Don't be afraid of getting your hands dirty. Just don't be afraid to do it. Just do it because, I mean, we didn't come from ranching backgrounds and we thought this idea up on kitchen napkins that I still have. And I think if there was anything to leave to him is like, just believe in yourself enough and don't give up and just keep going. But you can pretty much do anything that you want to do. And I know like Spencer and I have talked about that a lot. Like as he gets older and there's those things he wants to do, like we're gung ho and game, like just got to work hard and do it. So I think that would be it.
I love that.
I think we're going to end with that. This was probably the funnest podcast I've ever recorded. We're going to have to definitely do it again. But I hope you guys enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you, Bailey, for doing this with us, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Thank you for tuning in to the 2A Ranch Wife podcast. Be sure to head on over to the website at www.confessionsfromthe2aranchwife.com for all of today's show notes. Give us a follow on Instagram at 2A Ranch Wife, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss out on an episode. Until next time, thank you. And don't forget to stay in the middle.